Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Ernest, what's up? Look, today I want to talk to you about something that's been on my mind, a real weight on my shoulders. You know, we all have these moments, big or small, that just stick with us. When we don't talk about these things, then they can start to affect our lives in unexpected ways. That's why having a space to express these feelings is so important. I know firsthand the benefits of therapy. It's been transformative for my friends and family. Therapy can help you learn crucial skills like setting boundaries and developing coping strategies. It's not just about dealing with major events. It's also about enhancing your day-to-day life, allowing you to become the best version of yourself. So if you've been thinking about therapy, BetterHelp can be a great option for you. It's entirely online, which makes it super convenient and adaptable to your busy schedule. You start by filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can even switch therapists at any time if you feel the need without any additional cost. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/earnyourleisure today to get 10% off your first month. Remember, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/earnyourleisure. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now.
Before you have money or get to rent, all you want is $1 million. That's all you want. You're not signing for that. You're not doing. But in your mind, in your hood, you just feel like that's just what every, like, that's the goal. So if somebody say sign this, buy some, sometimes you don't, you just know that you're trying to get $1 million. Then you get $1 million and you realize.
Not enough.
Label, man, I'm supposed to have more than this.
My graduates from my school being Forbes, backdrop.
Backdrop.
A mic drop. Bag drop.
All right, guys, welcome back. EYL. This is going to be a dope episode. If you know us, you know we big fans of the music. Interview some of the brightest stars. Shout out to my man Tip. Shout out to Rick Ross. Shout out to Khaled.
Sure.
Am I missing anybody?
We met a bunch of them.
Styles
P,
my brother
Jim
Styles.
Jones, of course.
Jim, my brother Jim.
We did a lot of stuff with him.
But today we have the honor of speaking with Tony. 2 Chainz.
Breathing.
Yes.
All my breath.
2 Chainz, man, one of the dopest lyricists, but also a very interesting person when it comes. I was doing some research. Businessman, entrepreneur, investor.
Father, husband.
First and foremost.
Of course.
So this is going to be a dope episode. He has a new LP that's dropping. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's your 8th one, right?
7th.
7th?
Yeah. Can I just say this real quick? Ill nigga alert. Ill nigga alert. I just gotta say it. Yeah. I just gotta say it.
True. So first and foremost, thank you for joining us, my brother. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
No, well, good, man. So let's get into this. I want to talk about the business, but let's talk about the music first, the new album. Dope Don't Sell Itself. What's the inspiration behind that title?
If you substitute dope for ideas, it's just basically about, what keeps the world going around, man. You got something that people may need or want. You need to, you have to get out there and sell it.
You can't push it. Nobody's going to knock on your door.
Exactly, man. You got a good idea. You're sitting at home on the sofa, and you're not putting it out there. You're not planting the seeds. You're not building a relationship. So that's the same thing. I come from the trap. I come from the hustle. So that's why it got such a little edge to it, because where I come from, dope didn't sell itself. So you literally had to be, and it was everybody doing the same thing too. So what sets you apart? What makes you different? What makes whatever you have unique? Or, is it personality? Is it product? It's one of those projects, and it's it has some great features and great production. Saying? I got Moneybagg, Beat King, Lil Baby, artist Sleepy Rose. I got Dirk. I got, Young Boy. I got Sway Lee, Stove God. I got Simba. So it's well-rounded. It's very concise. And it's ADHD approved. It's only 12 songs.
when you were coming up with the people you wanted to collaborate with, obviously Baby Hot. But like when I saw Simba in there, I'm like, this dude is hot. And if you don't know him and like get familiar with, like, this dude can really spit.
From Oakland?
From Oakland, yeah. Wallow just had him when they did the freestyle, which is ridiculous.
He's ill.
So what was that process like? You said, all right, I got some of the established artists, but I want to introduce the world to some new heat. Like, what was that process
like?
Well,
this is like, it's not my last time doing trap music, but putting it all in one place, you know what I'm saying? And so it was important that I tapped in with the upcoming artists, but like most of these artists, they already cemented themselves in the game as far as like Lil Baby, Roddy Rich, Moneybagg. You can see them having, longevity in the game. And then you got Stove God and you got Simba, who you can see just upcoming and got the skill set to maintain a good career too. And for me, I'm somebody that collaborate with everybody. This is an album where it's just all fresh collaborations I haven't done with anybody. So it gives you that, voices there, they sounds obviously, but they instruments, So you got these different instruments that hadn't been together before on one track. That's what's going on this album.
Yeah, so you said this is your last trap album.
Mm-hmm.
So where are we going to musically from here? Like, where are we going?
Well, I think just, having a heavily 808-driven project. I'm still going to have that, but I just like to express myself in different ways. I got Collie Grove 2 coming shortly after this drop. And when I do stuff with Wayne, it's just
that's my dog.
Yeah, it's always, it's always trying to set the bar high and, go to the next level and be lyrically competent and competitive and just, all of those things. So I'm just looking forward to what this year has in store for myself, for real.
So let's get into this conversation. A lot of artists always complain on Twitter about not getting paid, royalties, masters. I understand you own your masters.
Yeah.
You got it a couple years ago, right?
Yeah, I have renegotiated.
What was the process of when you renegotiated your contract that, getting your masters?
Well, when I first signed with Def Jam, I had a lot of leverage when I got my solo individual deal. And a lot of artists were signing 360 deals, which I didn't have to do. And a lot of other artists were signing 5, 6, 7 album deals. My first deal was only 4 albums. So I literally been out of my contract. And I kind of took the LeBron approach or an athlete approach, right? And I... I control my own narrative. So now I just want to sign for one year.
Mm.
But 1 year is really like one album, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I want these things, because I can still be, I am still relevant and I can be an independent superstar. I built a lot of relationships. But, it was very amicable. Def Jam, it's just like when you work for a company, you do stuff, you pay bills, you got a good relationship, they listen, it's not That's what it's about. That's what you get lawyers for, so you can negotiate certain things like that. So it wasn't that hard.
When you said you had more leverage, what made you have more leverage than a regular artist when you negotiated your first contract?
Because once I started taking my solo, when I started taking my individual meetings to get a record deal, my thing was to really see what kind of, I was really trying to see what type of employees they had that could tap into the international market. I was already a domestic superstar. Before I signed my deal with Def Jam, I was doing shows, I mean, from everywhere from Idaho to South Dakota. I've been to all of these places. I'm not just capping. So I was already like becoming a household name. So I needed somebody that can really make me an international, you know what I'm saying, superstar when I get off, you know, Emirates or whatever. They know who I am, you know.
You have your deal with Def Jam, right, and you own your masters after you renegotiated, but your own record label is with Atlantic?
Yeah, that's another little hustle I got.
Yeah, so what made you say, all right, I already have a foundation here at Def Jam, but let me build my own independent situation here over Atlantic? What was that process like for you?
Well, I'm sure it's business, man. You know, I didn't want to put all my eggs in one basket. And also, I always wanted to work with Atlantic. They have people that I've known for a very long time. I have a very high respect for. Mm-hmm. And so when approaching this situation where I want to just, you know, put somebody else on, I feel like that'll complete my legacy. I need someone else with my DNA to be very successful. So that's what the angle was. You know, we got some really, really good people over there at Atlantic, mm-hmm. and that's why I wanted to kind of hang out at with that situation.
So we interviewed your partner, Snoop. Shout out to Snoop.
Yeah.
Escobar Lounge.
Yeah.
That's dope.
We do an event.
That's the homie. Escobar. We did an event at Escobar Lounge. That's a fact.
That's hard.
You actually came. Afterwards. It was
I was about to say, damn, I'll be smoking.
We had just left.
We was like leaving and you was coming in.
I kind of remember that now when you said that.
Yeah.
I kind of remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Snoop is shout out my partner. She's super and, you know, business minded. You know?
Yeah. So definitely is.
That's the homie. So anybody not familiar, Escobar Lounge is you have two restaurants.
We have three going on. Yeah. So Escobar is and it's, you know, two words. It's Esco. You know, Escobar. And we've been open for 5 years. It's a lounge restaurant, you know, has all the vibes, you know, music, you know, hookah. And then we opened up another one called Esco South,
which is
about 15, 20 minutes south of that one.
Okay.
And then over the pandemic, we opened up another one called Esco Seafood. That's in the highly traffic area of Edgewood in Atlanta. And it only serves seafood and it has some of the best seafood in downtown Atlanta. And now we're working on Esco Pizza, which would be like our late night spot, hangout spot.
Mm.
And this should be, you know, opening it within the next 60 days.
Shout out to Edgewood. Killer Mike.
Oh, yeah, Killer Mike. Yeah. We went to his barbershop. Yeah.
Nah, man, that's on Edgewood. Yeah. Yeah, Killer Mike got his stuff together too.
Yeah. So what made you want to get into that as far as like, we always hear restaurants like one of the hardest businesses.
Mm-hmm.
It's one, everybody wants, it's like a barbershop. Everybody wants to have a restaurant, but until they actually get one. Like, what
Yeah, I mean, we've all went through that. Cause you know, we don't do the necessary.
Due diligence.
Yeah, we don't do it. We just be like, man, I want one of these. Like, what you gonna do? I ain't be shut down in a year. I'm just blessed and fortunate enough to have a partner that has a very high IQ when it comes to hospitality. And I have a very high IQ when it comes to like ideas and marketing. And when we teamed up, it just was like, it was a perfect situation because I had other relationships I could bring in, you know what I mean? And make our situation look bigger. So I had some property that Snoop was interested in, and then we just grew as friends and like-minded people and business people, and we end up, you know, going in business together, and it's been a cool little run.
Yeah, that's what she said when we interviewed her. She said that when y'all like linked up, and she was like, you know, like the business did it, and you was like, yo, I got these ideas, and mm-hmm. I know the people, I'm 2 Chainz, and it was like a perfect mm-hmm. marriage. Talk about like the benefit of partnering, because a lot of people don't fully understand like the benefit of actually having a partner, so you don't have to do everything.
Man, I think you should have a partner with everything. I don't think you should do anything by yourself.
Mm.
I mean, it's enough money, enough splits, enough everything for everyone. I don't think, and you know, I never understand that. I don't think you should do anything by yourself. I think you should find somebody that's very passionate in whatever field that you're looking for. So I'm a great talent scout. Everybody that's around me, they do what they can do at the highest level. Whatever I need them for, you know, engineer to security to photography, whatever is around me, they need to be doing it at a very passionate high level.
So do you have visions of scaling it outside of Atlanta? Are we thinking about going to other cities?
Well, yeah, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, ESCO has been internally franchised the last 5 years. You know what I'm saying? We're going on fourth place. So now we're about to start publicly franchising it so other people can, you know, and it'll take some of the, you know, relief of every day, you know, off of us, but we'll still be getting, you know, our percentages. So we'll be doing that. We'll be kicking in that phase, you know, really soon too.
That's dope.
Yeah, so yeah, I had the lounge, right? Escobar Lounge in Tapas, but you also got into, is it Pampa Nail Salon?
Oh yeah, Pampa's right down the street from me.
Is that, because I say Pampa. That might be the new slogan.
Major key.
I know she was doing a beautician salon right above one of the lounges. Yeah. So did you have that vision from the idea that she had already created, or is that something you had always wanted to do anyway?
No, it was something I always wanted to do, but I'm actually about to transform mine into her business model. You know what I'm saying? Her business model is just like, it takes a lot of the stress off running the business because mm-hmm. you're letting, she has suites. So she's letting each individual be their own landlord.
Yep.
And I just think it's a really good idea. She has three of them. And, you know, I've had Pamper going on 2 years and it's a really cool laid back nail spa that offer different services. But I just see the bigger picture with maybe doing the suites.
Yeah, guys can go. We can go too. I know they be like, yo.
Oh, man, it's very
know,
important.
Very
no,
important.
I get. Yeah,
keep your hands clean. I don't know, keep your man. Shoes clean.
First of all, I'm not worried about what nobody say, especially nobody that don't know how to do nothing. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, I'm just sitting down.
I feel like,
man,
you just censored yourself.
Yeah, I definitely did. Yeah. Did I get my feet rubbed? Like, what's not gangster about getting your feet rubbed? Like, that's not, I would never let anybody touch my, please. I be getting my pedicure, I be getting my manicure, I be, my restaurant right next door, I be having them folks frame me a Casamigo margarita. For real.
Nah, that's, cause she actually was talking about that, like this, the suite. So it's like, if you go to a barbershop, to the public, like some barbershops, they have like the model where there's different like corners mm-hmm. and it's like each barber is like responsible for their own, it's like a business within a business.
Yeah, like they rent the chair.
So you don't have to mm-hmm. micromanage it. Mm-hmm. It runs a lot more efficiently than having like a bunch of employees. Everybody's really an entrepreneur and then it's like you have the whole overarching thing taking portions of everybody's profit.
The other advantage is that now if you have suites, you have a one-stop shop. So you get your hair done, next door you can get your nails done. Right, you get your pedicure, then the next week you can get your eyelashes done. Mm-hmm. So you got all those things mm-hmm. in the same place. You don't have mm-hmm. to go anywhere.
Yeah, I do. I have all those.
We gave the business plan away. I apologize.
I mean, it's necessary.
It's dope. It's dope. It's
everybody is one, and not a lot of black owned nail salon anywhere. I don't care where you are, mm-hmm. hardly any of them. I've never really seen a lot of black owned nail salon places. Mostly all Asian. So
yeah, definitely up here for sure.
It's good to, you know, we're gonna go there. We might as well own it.
There it is.
It only makes sense. So talk about Pineapple Express Dispensary.
Yeah, so Pineapple Express is a dispensary that just opened on Hollywood and Vine in California, prime location, down the street from Capitol Records. And I'm the second largest shareholder of this dispensary. And it's going to be very detrimental to my future passive income. You know, once it starts picking up traffic, you know, to kick out these, you know, monthly dividends. And once I get my money back that I invested, it'll be all profit from there.
How did they approach you? Or was it a situation where you were looking for somebody to partner with inside the space?
Nah, man, I'm gonna be honest, man. Man, I can't even run from money. Like, I can't even, and this is seriously, man.
Yeah.
You do it all without breaking a sweat, and you do it all in style. From being a boss exec to getting the kids ready for school, checking homework, family dinners, lunches and brunches with your day ones, trips to the salon, and weekend getaways are anything but a getaway. That's why Infiniti fully reimagined the QX60 to help you conquer it all with ease. A luxury SUV as functional as it is stylish, and as versatile as it is serene. Even when you have back-to-back conference calls on top of the kids' basketball practices, not to mention your side hustles, it's all done with grace. The all-new Infiniti QX60 has available features like seating for up to 7 passengers, a suite of active safety features, and massaging front seats. It's the SUV designed to help you conquer life in style. Now with extremely limited availability, contact your local retailer for inventory information.
I get approached by so many things every week that literally if I just tried to like run away from the money, it feel like it's chasing me. So I wasn't actually looking for anything. It chased me.
I don't chase money. Money chased me.
Leverage. Mm-hmm.
You know who said that? Shout out to Murder Mace. Hip-hop historian. That's a fact.
We really are. Predates to a certain, but we'll go to another time.
So let me ask you this about the, let's go back to music for a minute. What is some of your advice for young, because like I said, I mean, we see every week it's a different artist on Twitter complaining about their record label, complaining that they don't own their masters, complaining that they've never received money from music ever in the history of their career. And this is like very established artists, like some of the most popular artists. So.
Yeah, but let me stop you there. You got to think, man. A lot of the times when artists end up going to Twitter with this, they start to educate themselves, they start to learn themselves, and they start to have money. They have money when they're ranting on Twitter then. Before you have money or get to rant, all you want is $1 million. That's all you want. You're not signing for that. You're not doing. But in your mind, in your hood, you just feel like that's just what every, like that's the goal. So if somebody say sign this, buy some, sometimes you don't, you just know that you're trying to get $1 million. Then you get $1 million and you realize.
Not enough.
Label, man, I'm supposed to have more than this.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, a person, you know, I ain't have nothing. This person gave me $100,000 and took my pub, man, took advantage of, you know, whatever it is. But it's really like, it's really two things. It is people that's taking advantage of somebody being gullible and hungry and thirsty to get their fame. It is that. It is that. But then it's the person that don't mind it because they want to be on, they want like, I sign this, you going to pay for my bit. Like people, you're not even thinking. I don't know what artists think of, like, nobody like you that much to pay for your video, buy you a car, buy you clothes, buy you jewelry, and don't want nothing out of it. It's just not, it ain't, I don't know what world is it. Nobody, your daddy don't want to do that for you. Your dad won't pay for your video, buy your car, your clothes. So you think this regular dude or executive is going to do that without getting some out of it? It's really not as hard as people making it seem.
So you, speaking of your dad, because you rest in peace to your dad, you said that when you got your first million, you said, I'm going to go get this house. So I'm wondering, was the financial literacy, because what you're speaking of, is that something you learned or was that something that you had been educating yourself before you stepped into the game?
No, so I'm somebody that learns off all my experiences, and I didn't even know I learned off of my experiences. My mom was a loan officer when I was a kid, so she was always kind of in real estate or in that realm or being around real estate type of dudes. My daddy has always been a hustler. He's never had a job since I've known him. You know what I'm saying? He's always been a hustler. And the house that I have, that I end up getting, I have, when I first got my record deal in 11 or something like that, going cold turkey from the streets, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot of liquid, safe money in safe. And so the first thing I did before I even got my record deal was buy my mom a home. Now, granted, at this time, her home was it was only like $100,000, but I bought it. It was a foreclosed home. An ex-NBA guy mom had, and something happened and the bank took the house or whatever. So it was customized kind of. It was a nice house. It had a pool and everything. And I bought the house for my mom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I still had a lot of cash, and my dad, me and him were like super, you know, 100. I started going into this neighborhood that wasn't far from where we were staying, and the houses were like $700,000 and all of this stuff. Now, keep in mind, I think I might have had not even $700,000, maybe close, right? And so my dad don't know how much money I got, but he's asking me, like, if you get this house, how you gonna furnish it? And I didn't even think that far. I just thought about the exterior of the house. So then I'm like, man, I ain't taking your ass nowhere else. Like, you just made me think. And it was like, it wasn't even a hard thought, but I really didn't think about that. I'm like, I can get this bitch. And then he like, shit, what are we going to do about furniture? I'm like, man, come on. And then, you know, there was another place that came up. I go see this place. It has all this acreage. It has everything I need. And me and my daddy go, he breaks in the house. Like, boom, we break in to look at it. Like, oh, I like this. I'm like, yeah, man. And we spiritual people. We prayed on it. And I was able to do that. I was able to buy the house then. I don't do things like that anymore. My mentality has changed. But early on, I would try to buy things because I was afraid that if something happened to me or if I went broke.
At least you have something.
I got mama house.
That asset.
I own mama house. I own this car. You know, I don't really do things like that. I don't mind putting a little something down. But at first, I was trying to be broke, trying to be on zero. But you know what I'm saying? Because that makes me hustle more. And I already got these things. I did that for a very long time.
It's like Dame Dash was talking about.
Yeah, I put it back in the streets.
Yeah, that's very stressful, though. Always have to.
No, but it's oh, man, I don't know how to say this, man. You need that. I don't know. Like, for certain hustlers, when I think when it's so much cushion.
Get comfortable.
I think it can make one lazy. You know what I'm saying? Just a little lethargic. I think when you just know, like, anybody that had money, when you start getting down there, getting low.
It's a different feeling.
You start being like, man, I can't sleep. You get up. Yeah. You start going places that you didn't feel like going. Like, I don't know, you know, it might be a relationship. I might meet somebody here that's worth me. So, you know, I kind of like that. I like being on the edge a little bit. Cause I know how to get it.
So this is, and we spoke about this before, but like setting new lows, right? And so like when you said it gets low, at that point, you're probably, like somebody's low might be if I had 2,000 in the bank, if I had 10,000 in the bank, if I had 100,000, yours might have been like around that area, six figures. It's like that's low, but still, there's still a sort of a cushion. Are you like, I'm grinding this thing down to like.
No. When I start getting low on the millions, I'm talking about. Okay. Yeah, because.
Different. That's different.
No, you'll go through those things. I have a lot of things that I take care of.
True.
Yeah. So literally a million could literally be going in a year or something. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to blow my money like that. But when you're taking care of everything, and it could go. I know people like a million, but it can.
Yeah.
Nah, I know. Facts. So you said something like people approach you all the time. Decide what's good, what's not. Because that's a lot of like athletes, entertainers, they lose a lot of money by investing in friends' businesses that fail or, you know. So how do you personally decide like this is good, this is a dub?
I listen very well. I'm not investing to any company unless the person themselves is investing into it. You have to have some kind of teeth in the game. You have to believe in yourself or your product. I don't care how rich or how poor you are. I'm not putting anything into it. So I know you put something into it. I listen. And I try to see if it's just disruptive to whatever market it's getting into. Like, is it like, oh, what my, you know, what you call it got this? Or is it that or is it a good idea, you know? And then, you know, I go from there. I have a really good team of people that when things come across the desk, I get a peek at it too, you know? And I've been blessed to be a part of multiple, you know, raises and VCs and a couple SPACs and a couple things, you know?
Yeah, I think, like, that's the part right there. Like, we hear 2 Chainz talk about venture capitalism. We're talking about SPACs. I know one of the things you invested in recently was Helogen, which is a SPAC. Well, a SPAC investor, the solar energy company. You want to talk about that and the role Phyllis Newhouse and who she is and the role she had in investing in that?
Yeah. Miss Newhouse is my mentor. She's one of my mentors. We've known each other for quite some time. We actually met on a flight.
Wow.
Yeah, I sleep really good on airplanes for some reason. And normally when I get on them, I go to sleep, you know what I mean? And I've met 3 people my whole life, and I've been flying along. I'm a Diamond Medallion member. I've been flying a long time. And I met 3 people that two of them I'm in business with, and he just reminded me of something. 2 of them I'm in business with, and one of them, you know, helped get one of my daughters in school. And it's just like, I built some very great relationships with these 3 conversations. But one of them was Miss Newhouse, who, you know, has a cybersecurity company for the Pentagon and just does all, like, I wouldn't leave my phone around. And I feel like
she's a powerhouse.
She'll break in that thing, but she don't need your, you know what I mean? And she just, you know, she just checks all the boxes, man. She's Black, female, she was in the military, you know, all the minority, but she's just very strong and positive and wants to bring people up and educate them at the same time. And my other guy, Rashawn, I put them
together. Rashawn Williams?
Yeah. Yeah. So I put them together and, you know, it's just been a lot of beautiful things coming out of these relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So did they approach you about the Helogen situation and you like, all right, this makes sense. This is something that could be happening in the future.
Yeah. Cause it's crazy that, but you know, I mean, we're living in Web3. We're living in the future right now. And these people are, you know, reusing energy. mm-hmm. you know, repurposing the sunlight, the sun, which is like a source that you just, you can't plug it up, unplug it. It's the sun, you know what I mean? And that, and so that's what heliogen is. It's a solar energy. And you know, you know the car's about to start being electric. You just can see the trajectory of what's going on. So I invested into that. And then, they got bought by a SPAC.
Yeah, true.
That I was a part of.
Ernest, what's going on? This Black History Month, McDonald's is kicking off Future 22, a campaign celebrating 22 Gen Z leaders across the country who are making an impact on their communities right now. This generation may have the largest influx of young leaders since the Civil Rights Movement. They're starting their own organizations, finding ways to empower youth and culture, standing up and speaking out. McDonald's is showcasing their efforts and the impact they're having on the world. Did you know there's a Black Sign Language? Yep, it's a form of American Sign Language that truly speaks our language. Student J.C. Smith is an advocate for the Black Deaf and Blind and an expert in BASL who works to help keep the tradition alive. McDonald's introduces his story and the stories of other Gen Z community leaders impacting the future on Instagram at We Are Golden.
How you feel? You talking about Web 3.0. How you feel about the metaverse?
Yeah. No, listen. I just saw something. I had a residency in the metaverse.
Was it true? Were you really in there for 24 hours straight?
No.
Oh, all right.
You got the Oculus?
Yeah, I got the Oculus. No, but I was tired as hell when I took it off. Like, that thing makes you tired. Like the metaverse will wear you out. So much stuff to do. But I had a show in there. And then I forgot I did a show for the metaverse because it was like when pandemic first started. And it was like, why are people going to pay me all this money to perform in front of nobody? You know, and I go to a real venue. And it's nobody there. They just got like cameras. You know, I got a band, a DJ. I'm like, this is, you know, I had to like act like people was here. But God, I did it. Just forgot I did it, man. And I go in the metaverse and I see big old billboard like the ones in Vegas. Like 2 chunks. I'm like, what the hell? The hell are you doing in here? Not coming at them. I'm doing a whole show. I'm like, yo.
So you actually
you went to see your concert?
I went to see my own concert.
It was packed, a lot of people.
It was like, man, you know, it's like when you go in those concert halls, it'd be like a little balcony. So it was probably about, maybe 20-something people, you know what I'm saying? But you know, these little heads be walking around and, you know, you like give a little pound to one person. And,
did they know it was you? Like,
no, because I had on my friend's Oculus. And you know, like when you look in the mirror.
It was the other person.
It was the other person. But I'm looking at him, I'm like, damn. I'm looking at him, I'm like, damn. And you know, he ain't got no hair. He's like, you know. So then I go into the, you know, the portal. And that's when I come out the portal, it was right there. I didn't have to search it. I probably would have never found it if I had to like search. But I went in there and I'm looking up and I was like right where Buddy is. And I go in there and it's like, I'm performing. And I was like, what the hell? This was just, it was really cool. It was crazy.
That must have been crazy to see yourself performing and you on a different person's like avatar.
And I'm playing to the camera. Like, I don't know. I guess that day I just was, you know, in one of my silly moves and I'm in that mood, like, you know, and I'm just like, yo, you know, Tony. You know, bro.
You know me.
Just trying to be a whole fan at this time. Like,
don't act like that.
And I'm talking to people, you know, and I'm just like, because I think my voice is kind of distinct, you know what I'm saying? And I'm just one of these people, like, yo, is this 2 Chainz? But
did they know it was you?
Mm-mm, because I'm looking like a whole nother person.
Yeah. You know, Oculus, sound like, just like Tony.
Yeah, it like sounds just like, bro, but yeah.
So, but how do you feel like, to me, it's amazing, but it's also kind of scary, kind of too. It's, I don't know, it's a lot of gray area. Like, what's your personal thoughts on like how we moving into this virtual world?
You can't slow it. You can't do nothing about that. You know that. You can't do nothing about it.
Play the game.
Yeah, you just got to be part of it. So that's the key too, because I don't want any artists, especially artists, right? Like, you said you got paid to do this, right? Like, they paid you a long time ago and you're just watching it now. So what is your advice to artists that are trying to like ignore the space and not really familiarize themselves with it?
I mean, you just let people, you know, catch up with it when they do. You know?
Tony said he's gonna take all the concerts until y'all ready.
Nah, man, I'm sure these artists smart enough to, if it didn't ball paper, I'm sure they'll pull up.
Figure it out.
These artists not turning no money. I didn't understand it when I did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. And I did a, man, It's like I did an interview and they telling me talk to this.
Yeah.
This is people. You know, trying to fathom that before this even comes out, you know.
Yeah.
It's just something else.
You talked about changing your name. You was Titty Boy at first, 2 Chainz, Tony. And I heard you say something that was very interesting. He was like, you know, most businesses, they rebrand themselves after a couple of years. It's very important not to stay stagnant. So talk about that as far as like, you know, staying relevant. And rebranding yourself, not getting caught up in just being the same person forever.
That's something I learned from Miss Newhouse. So I'd be injecting my music career with stuff I'd be learning in business. You know what I'm saying? And you know, businesses rebrand themselves. When we're talking about the metaverse, Facebook just changed their name like they won.
It's a fact.
Facebook.
Formerly known as
Facebook.
You know, of course, my mom still say Facebook. It'll take a minute to transition over, but some of the biggest companies ever, man, they changed the logo.
Yep.
You ever seen the thing where you don't even realize how many times the logo changed on
Apple, like Apple.
It's just like, you know, the Apple got a little bite, a big bite, you know, it's just like
the rainbow.
Everything, you know what I mean? And these are billion-dollar businesses. What makes me think my...
Trillion dollar.
What makes it think my regular ass could sit up here and be regular forever, not change up, not rebrand or do something like that? So that's why, you know, I come back with something else exciting every chance I get.
Yeah. How you adapt with music? Because the sound of music changes so much, whether it was trap music, drill music, like crunk music back in the days. Like, do you feel as an artist that you need to just stay true to your sound, or do you feel like you need to change your sound as new music starts to evolve?
I think it's important that I grow with the music, but I don't
just become trendy.
I stay in my lane. I definitely don't chase the trend. I definitely not chasing the trend, but I'm not staying in a space where it sounds like I'm ha 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 ha. You know,
he be the bop bop.
I'm not gonna like stand on the principle of real hip hop and all of that stuff. I'm not
boom bap.
Yeah, I'm not.
Was that part of the
find that balance, you know?
Was that part of the conscious awareness of having LeBron as an A&R on the 2 albums ago?
Yeah, Rapper Go to the League. So what happened with that was, first of all, LeBron is a very good friend of mine.
Yeah.
2, LeBron loves music very well.
Yeah.
3, he's LeBron James, right? Let's stop. Right, he's LeBron James, right? Yeah. LeBron, and what he also does that all the other people that he gets compared to on the court didn't do was loudly support hip-hop and black artists. Like, he do this, back of the Maybach.
Yeah.
You know, back of the Maybach. But like,
tagging them in the stories and all
Like, you know, LeBron is working out to Young Dolph.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's like a Memphis independent rapper.
That's a fact.
Like, he ain't doing this in his headphones, like not trying to let you know he fuck with you.
The T Grizzly joint.
He lets you know he fuck with you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So when I do the album called Rapper Go to the League, he got the same kind of initiative that he pushing called More Than an Athlete, which is kind of like the same, like it aligns, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm saying, like, in my album, I'm trying to say, like, they saying the only thing we can do is like dribble or come up with a 16. But in the album, I tried to talk about us being able to do more and even with the rollout. And I think somebody told him he couldn't come in on some, just dribble, shut up and dribble something.
Yeah.
Tell them folk, bro, I'm more than an athlete. The fuck is you talking about? You know what I mean? So that connected, that idea. And then the A&R idea became because I let him hear the music early. Then I let him trim some of the fat and just listen to his ideas, because he riding around listening to the music. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so, yeah, it was one of my, you know, genius rollouts that I like to do.
I mean, this rollout is incredible too. I wanted to talk about that, but like, yeah, the LeBron thing was crazy. Like, Rule the World, probably one of my favorite joints you guys got.
Thank you.
That A. Marie sample,
yeah,
which was crazy. So, the process of getting these rollouts, man. Like now, I just saw you took over a restaurant in Atlanta.
Everybody, Crystals, yeah.
Like, who are you coming up with all the ideas for these campaigns? I saw that the tank was out there.
Yeah, it's my tank. Yeah. let me use your tank for your idea. Well, first of all, I just announced that I'm head creative marketer at Crystals, which is a very identifiable restaurant down south. They just need some revamping some credibility, some new things on the menu, some redesign and restructure. And the dude that owns it, cool as hell, and gave me an opportunity to do that and spread my wings. Fast forward to my album dropping, and I need somewhere to do the activation, right? I got, like, my album cover is a shoebox, which I like to call my first bank account. It's where I learned how to save money, stash money. It was literally my ATM. When I went in my shoebox late at night, sometimes I feel like, damn, you know you ain't supposed to be doing this. I'm somewhere gambling. I'm messing up my re-up money. So when I put this box up, it was my hope that it related or it just caught a bunch of hustlers' attention and made them feel a certain nostalgic way about when that's all you had was a shoebox. Like, if somebody took that shoebox, it would be curtains for you.
Lights out.
Yeah.
Lights out.
So I have a life-size one that I'm selling merch out of, playing the album out of, and that's in the parking lot that I got the tank in front of and all of that stuff. So it's just, it's fun. And of course, I got a team to help me, you know, flesh out ideas. But once I come with the title name and then the album cover, everything else is like, maybe we could do this. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Maybe we can do that.
Yeah. So, I want to talk about like the fashion and all that, because I feel like rap is very synonymous with like entertainment or like even wrestling in a sense, where it's like growing up, you had your favorite wrestler, but it wasn't so much how good of a wrestler he was. It was like what he was doing.
Who was your guy?
I like British Bulldog.
Okay.
I like British Bulldog.
Okay. But I thought it was two of them though.
No, he had a partner. It was a tag team.
It was British Bulldogs, right?
A tag team partner. I think it was his brother.
Yeah, I thought it was called the British Bulldogs, though.
Plural?
The British Bulldog is like a real dude. Because I'm an Ultimate Warrior.
Macho Man Randy Savage also.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, legend.
Elizabeth. Hulk Hogan, obviously.
Yeah.
Legion of Doom was one of my guys.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels.
Yeah. But yeah, so they all, like, you know what I'm saying? So I feel like rap is the same way. Like, you got rappers like Snoop, who, you know what I'm saying? That's his persona. Snoop, Jay-Z, he's a mystery man. You never see him. You got Nas, you got T.I., you got Lil Wayne, 2 Chainz. So was this something that you thought about, like crafting, like how I want to present myself to the public, or this is just like who you are and it's just like?
I try to be as transparent as possible. I don't want to lose that excitement when people see me when I walk in the room by being out too much or, you know, oversaturating myself. I'm at Escobar probably more than I'm at any other place. It's not far from my studio. We got great food, great vibes. That's where you might see me at. Other than that, I'm not trying to be at everything, every event, next to every person to get a photo op. That's just not me. I think I'm just preserving my brand. And I know who I am. I know what I got, so.
Yeah. We could stay on the fashion part because, like, a few years ago, you had to deal with Versace, with the shoes. So how did that come about? Because I know it was a black designer that helped create the shoe.
It was a black designer that helped put the deal together.
Put the deal together, too. So what was that like? Again, was it like, obviously, there's a lot of brands coming after you. Is this one you were like, I want to create something with this brand because I'm wearing it?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, you know, this was a manifestation with and also with somebody that I know that got in with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, the idea started coming to fruition with the name of the shoe and the design of the shoe. And I think he thought it'd be, you know, cool if it was a duel with two people, you know what I mean, and brought me in.
Mm-hmm.
And I met the higher ups, and it was, for me, the situation was for a year. It really looks good on my resume, and it piped up the brand.
Yeah,
because Versace really wasn't doing nothing until we dropped the Chain Reaction. I mean, they were doing something because they are a legendary brand.
Yeah,
but at that particular time, they kind of was down a little bit, and this was like, you know, the dad shoe started coming out.
I was gonna say, yeah.
So it's like big bulking, and these shoes make short people feel tall.
Very important.
Yeah. So.
So you was on Versus. Versus recently made news. I think all of the people that were involved with Versus actually have some level of ownership when they got purchased.
Yeah.
Cam had actually, he said a freestyle about that. So talk about that, like your experience actually like working with Swiss and Tim and then like, you know, being business part. Like what's your thoughts on how that whole situation kind of played out?
I just think we got to protect, you know, Swiss, man. He one of those. No, he one of the founders of Good Energy, man. He my Virgo brother. He always got good compass, good conversation, good game. And he told me personally how him and Tim, you know, wanted to give back and wanted to think outside the box by offering people who did the Versus a piece of the company once it went public. So me and him spoke about it plenty of times. We actually speak a lot, Swiss and myself. And he's just one of those people that didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
He didn't have to do that.
Yeah. What's going on, Ernest? Look, at 26, I made one of the most important decisions of my life. That's right. I didn't have family at the time, but I did have a life insurance policy. A wise man told me life insurance isn't about the people who die. It's about the people who live. It's one of the best ways to secure generational wealth for your family's future. And it makes perfect sense why people get life insurance, especially term coverage, which surprisingly is affordable. Why not pay a little bit each month to secure the future of the people you love long term? If you're asking yourself that question, I want you to check out Ladder. Ladder makes it impressively fast and easy to get coverage. You just need a few minutes and a phone or a laptop to apply. Ladder's algorithms work instantly, so you'll know right away if you're approved for coverage. No hidden fees, and you can cancel any time. Since life insurance costs more as you age, now is the time to get started. So check out Ladder today to see if you're instantly approved. Go to ladderlife.com/EYL. That's LADDER life.com/EYL. That's ladderlife.com/EYL. You know how this works. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Secure your family's future right now.
Nobody would have like been like, damn, boy, you know, you had me up there. You should have shot me something. Nobody would have said that. Because it's all about, really, every artist always wanted to kind of like get their flowers while they're here. And the verses is a great way to do that.
Yeah, and it wouldn't have changed his legacy if he didn't do it. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he did, and now it gets to extend other people's legacies, is vitally important. I think that's incredible. Yeah.
What's your thoughts on the future of Versus, being that you know, part owner of it? Like, how you feel about the franchise of Versus?
Yeah, I don't have any say so of it. He's just like,
I mean, like, just like, yeah. as like, what do you just think about it? Like,
I think it's one of the dope things that got us through the pandemic. Like I said, it gives artists their flowers while they're here. You actually see your peers logging on. It's not as heavily, I don't think it has as much traffic as it did when everybody couldn't go nowhere.
Yeah.
Because you'd be like, damn, I'm missing such and such, you know. That's how I was trying to catch up with, like, Dipset. I'm like, oh. But, you know, when the others were happening, that's all we had to do.
Yeah.
So now it's just the world has opened up a little bit more. So
yeah. Shout out to Swiss, man. We actually had the honor of being front row for that Dipset Locks battle.
We were.
Legendary. That was legend.
Yeah, that's... Shout out to Kiss.
Yes.
Older than 914 then.
Yeah, shout out to Kiss. Let me ask you this before we wrap. Talking about Atlanta, like, you know, that's like our second home. Shout out to everybody in Atlanta. Seeing the evolution of Atlanta, not just from a music, everybody always talks about Atlanta musically. We know that, but we're in the entrepreneur space, so we go down there and we look at it from an entrepreneur standpoint, and it's encouraging to see so many black owned businesses, so many, like, everywhere you go it's like a black owned pool hall, black owned,
oh yeah, Atlanta's that,
like, absolutely. So what's your thoughts on that side of Atlanta? Like I said, everybody asks the question about Atlanta music, everybody working together. That's, what's your thoughts on Atlanta business for black entrepreneurs?
I mean, it's probably worth researching, but we probably have the most black owned businesses in the world. Let me rephrase that, maybe not, maybe Africa.
In America, definitely. In America. Yeah, yeah, sure. Outside of Africa, we'll say.
Yeah, be like, somebody just looked up.
Like, Nigeria, we're gonna have like a million Nigerians at the door. Yeah, like, nah,
but definitely, somebody was like,
it's a meme.
What did he say?
But. Yeah, what I was saying.
Yeah, but you say they got the most black owned businesses.
Yeah,
in America, for sure.
Opportunities for black, but it's, you know, it's changing. Sure, if you can see it changing. Somebody's fed up. The prices are going up.
Yeah, prices is crazy.
Somebody's fed up, man. You know, because this stuff has always been available. Our mindset changed. Mm. This stuff has been here, yeah, like it's property.
Mm-hmm.
And now when I see something for sale, I stop and take a picture of it. I don't just ride past stuff that's for sale or for lease or nothing no more. I don't care where I am in the world. And I think our programming is just different, especially in Atlanta. It's just so attainable. You really know somebody that you went to school with that own this, that own, you know what I mean? It ain't no movie down there. You see these little movies where this town was like, no, we own this whole block. I own these three buildings. I own the dirt. I don't just own the business of Escobar. That's the, you get it, Escobar's this business. I own the dirt up under here. You know what I'm saying? Is that this bitch can be whatever I want it to be.
Is that one of your investment strategies? Like, I'm going to get the dirt first and then we're going to put something on,
yeah,
on the dirt?
Yeah, that's definitely me. Yeah. I'm getting the dirt. I get letters every month from somebody trying to either buy it or somebody tell me I need to do something with this structure because I'm playing that Monopoly grab. I'm buying this dirt. I ain't been able to renovate a lot of that stuff, yeah, but I own the dirt.
Four houses get you the hotel.
All of that.
Monopoly. How was it for you to see, because you're from Atlanta, to see houses, like you said, houses used to be 50, whatever. Now, those same houses on the West End or like by Mercedes-Benz Stadium is a couple hundred thousand. Like, how is it to see that?
Ain't nothing a couple hundred thousand no more. It used to be. So when it was a couple hundred thousand, we was taking it for granted. I was telling people, I was like, man, it's like this thing, this building, 400,000. I'm like, man, we spoiled. I'm like, in a minute, because of like a lot, I bought two or three buildings for like $500,000. But I started thinking like what cars cost and what jewelry costs. And I'm like, that's what made me start buying buildings. Because I know like you, especially in New York, man, you can get three pieces and be at $500,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And
started buying buildings.
So, yeah, I'm buying buildings.
Don't let that go over your head. Please. Buildings.
They said Buckhead is thinking about succeeding from the city of Atlanta. You heard about that?
Yeah, I be hearing a lot about it. I think the mayor got to be cool with that or something. You know what I'm saying? And we got a new mayor by the name of Andre. He from the west side of Atlanta. You know, our last mayor name was Keisha.
Keisha, yeah.
Then we got Andre. Then we got Dre. You know what I'm saying? Come to Atlanta.
I think they need to put your picture up when we enter the airport. I know I see Dominique all the time.
I see Ludacris all the time.
You see Luda and JD.
Yeah.
I think we need to, like, this is my city.
Well, you know, they had the song called Welcome to Atlanta. So I think it's conceptual to, like, the airport.
To that song?
Oh, okay.
You know, that makes sense. Welcome to Atlanta. You got Lewis.
Okay, welcome.
JD, you know what I'm saying?
Play on that.
Because it's a lot. You got to think, Atlanta, we've been running the rap game for 20 years, so it's tons of artists they could put up, like, for real. Piped up.
Here's why I think you should be up there, right? We're going to flip this into one of your investments. Basketball is one of your loves.
Mm-hmm.
College Park.
Skyhawks.
Minority investor.
Yeah.
Investor. I don't even want to put minority on it. Investor. But they have...
Minority owner.
Owner. I'm sorry. Owner. They have the College Park... Skyhawks as one of the billboards when you're walking in.
All right, say less.
We got to get you in there.
Say less. Next time you come through there, Tony.
Tony.
Say less.
Yeah, I mean.
I'm about to call the car now. I'm about to make that happen. See something, I be playing stuff down like it don't be a problem. But since you say they need to see my face when they coming down that escalator, I'm going to make it happen.
Well, talk about that. That's important. People might not know that you're owner in a sports team.
Yeah. College Park Skyhawks is a byproduct of Atlanta Hawks.
G League, right?
G League, yeah. Yep. It's affiliate of the NBA. I've been blessed to have players on the team make it to the NBA. Couple games, some get contract, so I live vicariously through that because I enjoy basketball so much.
Yeah.
I still do. And this was just a minor step and learning lesson before I am actually a part of an NBA team.
Yeah.
That's your ultimate goal?
I was thinking like that's where we're going with it because there's two places we can see you. Yeah, we can see you at Escobar. We're definitely going to see you courtside at the Hawks game.
Yeah, you're definitely going to see me there.
We're definitely going to see you there.
Let me ask you this before we wrap. Hip-hop question. Yeah, Atlanta. I don't want to say Mount Rushmore. Top five. Your personal. Like, what's your personal?
Yeah, I got asked this already, so it's real easy. And I'm not going to say me, all five of them. My Atlanta top five would be Andre 3000. It'd be T.I., Jeezy, Gucci, and Future.
That's a strong five. Yeah,
can't argue that.
Yeah, nah. Yeah. Can't argue that. B?
Yeah.
That's pretty solid.
It's pretty bulletproof right there.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Lil Baby's making a strong case, though. He's climbing up.
So what I'm saying? Like, but I can go Lil Baby. I can go. And not even me. I'm not even talking about me. I can go Saha. You know what I'm saying? When you talk about just...
So how the Prince song?
Yeah, when you talk about
Migos.
Just...
Migos. Oh, yeah. Forgot about Migos.
Migos.
Quavo.
You can do them, yeah.
Pick one.
Quavo.
We'll just put them as one.
So yeah, put them as one.
They won. Yeah.
But yeah, Atlanta, Migos. Man. Migos. Man, we got... It's like a menu. You know what I mean? You look at a menu and you can find something from Atlanta there.
He like, wait, you forgot Thug.
Satisfy your taste.
Oh, Thug. Yeah.
You forgot Thug.
That's it.
Yes.
No, and yeah, he be snapping too.
Snapping.
Like, you know, like I said, Atlanta, you got that menu. You just see what you want to fulfill your appetite for the day. You know what I'm saying? Atlanta, though, you put Atlanta artists on a piece of paper, though, or on your playlist. You know what I mean?
You're going to have a nice time. You put that playlist together, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah. A lot of classic music came out of Atlanta, for sure. Shout out to the A. My pleasure, my brother. Thank you. Thank you for rocking with us,
Thank
man.
Thank you for having me, man.
Appreciate you,
dope.
Brother.
It's been dope.
All right. Anything you want to let the people know that you might not have spoken about or anything like that?
Dope Don't Sell Itself, man. Check it out. Check me out. New things on the way.
You have it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.
My graduates from my school being Forbes. Backdrop.
Backdrop.
A mic drop. Backdrop.
Backdrop.